At the end, I'm going to leave a little time, knock on wood, tonight to have a bit of a discussion because I'm so curious what your experience was in the contemplation or reflection on non-clinging, non-grasping. So just put that in your file cabinet for our discussion towards the end of our meeting tonight. You know, all of us, I don't know if you would consider yourself a spiritual person or a spiritual being. I think maybe because you come to this community, but all of us have a sort of interior life, a secret life, an inner life that's not so obvious to the external world, perhaps. It's this time that we sit down and we meditate and we're turning our attention inwards and examining, looking at our own hearts and mind to see what's here. And that's very different from the sort of everyday get things done. There's so much to be done. I don't know, is that just me? There's so much to be done. And that's very different in the do things mode. We're very focused on the outer, what's happening, what needs to happen, what's going on next, who did what, I said that, they said that, right? Like this whole exterior focus. And our spiritual life, or our meditation practice, is an invitation to turn around and look what's actually going on here. So often we might blame others, like, oh, this thing happened and it's their fault, or I did that and it's my fault. But really, we can invite ourselves to take back our power. It's a way that we're giving away our power when we do that, when we're blaming others. We can give ourselves permission to take care of, to take back our own power, to let go of blame, and instead focus on tending to the self. Because so often when blame happens, isn't it because there's something that's tender and painful? Have you noticed that when the blame happens? Right? It's because there's been some, to use a Buddhist term or refer to a Buddhist metaphor, which is we've been hit with an arrow, and then that second arrow of blame can come on ourselves or on other people too. And instead, the invitation is to turn around and look at our own hearts, right? To look at our own self and tend to ourselves. And so there's so many people that don't actually do this, that don't look into their own minds. They spend a lot of time blaming others. This is right. And then we also actually give away our power by thinking that we're going to be happy when we get a certain thing. Oh, once I get that good job, I'm going to be really happy. Or, once I have like the perfect place to live, I'm going to be really happy. Or once I don't know, there's so many things. You can fill in the blank, whatever it is that you like the mind for you, because each of us has, like, I think we all do this, or most of us do it, but each of us have our own particular flavor of what we're thinking that we're going to be happy when we finally get that thing out there. I had a little, like a thought recently of how I'm actually so fortunate and blessed. And there's so many things, like I get to teach Dharma, which, you know, the teaching of the Dharma is great, but it's actually the thing about it that's pretty amazing is that I get to study the Dharma, the teachings, because they help me so much. And so you all, it's actually a generosity to me that you're showing up tonight, right? Like you're facilitating my spending the afternoon thinking about the Dharma and what I wanted to say. So I'm so fortunate in that sense that I get to do that. And I'm living in a really beautiful place. And I was thinking how like the human mind still tends to think of things that are just like, oh, well, I have all those good things, but only if only I got that next thing out there, then I would be happy. It's like we're putting off, and we might, with our meditation practice, turn around and start to look at that tendency in our own heart and mind to be reaching for something else or to be becoming, right? Like that process of becoming something. And so we're invited with our practice to turn around and look at our own minds. Now, when we sit down to meditate, we are calming our heart and mind. We do center ourselves. We do take some time to focus on the breath or whatever object you've chosen to help center ourselves, to help calm ourselves, because we need that. But that's not the aim of the meditation, actually. That's just like step one. And then the next part or the next step would be to really look and see what's going on in here. What's going on in here? So we're turning around and seeing and investigating our own heart and mind. We might notice how arrogant I am. When we look in our own mind, and we might notice how selfish I am, or how much prejudice I have, or how much greed I have, or how I can be insensitive. Or we might sometimes notice, oh, wow, actually, I have some kindness too, right? Like all of us have this whole mix of, we could say, it's a little bit of a shorthand, but to say, like, we all have this mix of light and dark. And part of what we're doing in our meditation practice is seeing that clearly so that we can create the conditions for ease, for freedom, for awakening in our life. So you could say that ignorance, the Pali word is moha, moha. Ignorance is not looking at our own mind and heart. And that you could say that moha, or not looking and not reflecting, is the root of all our suffering. I wonder if that's true. I would really actually want you to think about that and not take my word for it, to actually consider that. Do you think it's true? Is the root of suffering our forgetting, or our, yeah, I like that word, forgetting to remember to look at our own hearts and minds. That's interesting, right? The word for mindfulness, the Pali word for mindfulness, is sati, sati, which means to remember. So we're remembering when we sit down and practicing mindfulness to look, to inquire in. If we don't look into our own minds, then we don't change and grow. We're stuck in a pattern of blaming ourselves and the world for all the problems. And then all of us sometimes we're quite lost, right? All of us can be quite lost at times. And then all of us also can be very kind at times. I'm so struck often by the kindness of the people around me, really sort of simple, like unconscious kindness that shows up. So all of us are this beautiful, big mix of dark and light. So when we don't turn around and look inside our own minds, we cause so much pain to ourselves and to others. I mean, this could be really simple. Like for me, sometimes if I'm feeling quite grumpy about something, it could be, oh, I have a little headache, or I'm hungry, all the way to bigger stuff too, right? Like we have the whole range, but even the little stuff, if I'm not actually present, if I haven't remembered to turn and look inside my own heart and mind, it very often can leak out and cause harm to others, let alone to myself, right? So looking into our own mind is the path to inner freedom, to awakening, to happiness. We can become mature when we start to look into our own minds. And that our awakening, that our Yeah, awakening, our maturity. That's actually a more accessible word, isn't it? Emotional maturity. That our maturity comes not from relying on an external force, not from a teacher, not from a god, not from a tree. I live in the country now and I feel like I worship the trees, but the trees, I actually even feel like the trees are cheering us on all of the time. But the tree can't wake up for me. I have to wake up for myself, right? So that our awakening, our maturity comes from our own willingness to turn and look inside, look at our interior life, the secret life. So not the biography, not the like, oh, I did that and then that happened and then I went there and then I lived there and then I met this person. That's the external, but really, what is the interior life? What are the joys and sorrows? What are the hardships that we all carry? You know, we can't, when we look at other people, so often we might compare ourselves or think we know what's going on from another with another person by looking at them, but you can't tell. And we so often might even compare ourselves, how we feel on the inside, to how people look on the outside. And that's a confusion of the interior and the exterior. And don't compare yourself to how other people look on the outside. Don't do that. Don't fall prey to that, right? Like that sense of just this interior secret life where we each have our share of challenges and joys and fears and love and liberation and awakening. Other people cannot see what is happening in your mind, and I can't see what's happening in your mind. So there have been moments, I'm sure of it, where you've had fear or anger or lots of judgment because you're a human being, and it's me too. It happens to all of us. And all of us, you have let go of so much. You have already transformed quite a lot. You would not be here if that were not the case. Even though there is no prize, sometimes I think, like, if I could go around with little bits of chocolate in my pocket and I could just give them out saying, good job, good job, like little bits of metaphorical chocolate for all of you. Of course, only if your body can digest it well, but good job, right? So much work that you've done, so many challenges that you've faced. And in some ways, we don't really get that little piece of chocolate or that reward for all that we have transformed from others. But we do have that sense of more and more awakening in our own heart. So you can, with this turning inwards, look at yourself and look at all of the changes. So it would be nice. It would be nice. It's in like a what if world. If we were always loving and compassionate, right? If there's no ego, and if I didn't have fear and you didn't have fear, if there was no greed and hatred, that would be really nice, but it's not very realistic. In some ways, how wondrous it is that we have this whole range of human experience. I had a yoga teacher once, many like decades ago, and he used to say, instead of thinking of yourself as a human trying to have a more spiritual experience, think of yourself as spirit having a human experience. And I understand that the Buddha Dharma doesn't necessarily hold that we are spirits, but that sense, right, of a human experience of the 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys, and how wondrous the whole thing is. Do you know the teachings are that all of the Buddhas that came before us at some point were confused and lost? There's all these wonderful stories of the Buddha's past lives, right? That he passed through all these many lives where he was developing wisdom and compassion and loving kindness and patience. And so that to me implies that the Buddha at some point used to be confused and lost. And so, of course, it would be wondrous if we could all be, really loving and compassionate all the time. But that's ha not how the world works. So we might think that if we work extra hard, that we can become awake. If maybe we could find a better teacher. If maybe we could do just the right amount of retreats, if maybe we could get the right diet and the right, like this sense that we could do something to increase ourselves Well, that's actually a little bit backwards. Freedom isn't being all of those holy things. Freedom isn't about working harder. It is all about letting go. And in fact, it's all about not grasping and not clinging. So I've been contemplating on this, teaching for some years, but this week in particular, I've been contemplating on this teaching and how, like, I have in my mind letting go, letting go. This is something like I work with a lot. Let go, let go. We do this in our meditation practice. We let go and come back to the breath, and we might have to do that 747 times during a half hour meditation, right? Like that letting go. And then, but I was thinking about it in my mind, and this could be just a place where I'm at a growing edge in my practice, but in my mind, letting go feels like something that I'm doing, whereas non-grasping and non-clinging feels like something that I'm not doing. Does that make sense to you, the difference? Or maybe that's too fine a parsing, actually. Maybe it doesn't quite make sense. So non-clinging, not picking something up. So let's give an example. In the meditation, a thought stream comes along. It can be quite compelling. Sometimes the thought streams, they're very compelling often. And we could think, oh, let go and come back to the breath. Or we could just not pick it up. I guess maybe it's just a little bit of semantics. Anyway, I'm going to keep going. The practice or the teaching is that freedom comes from the letting go, from the non-grasping and the non-clinging. And that is the true secret to inner freedom, non-grasping, non-clinging. So the secret is to not cling. Did you ever have something happen and then you thought, oh, I'm always like this? And you get really frustrated with yourself because you think, I'm always like this. That is a clinging on to the story. Or, right? Or something happens and you blame someone else, and then your mind keeps coming back to it again and again. Because you see the suffering in that, right? You've been in that mind loop where it's so just looping and looping and looping. So instead, we can turn and look towards our own heart. Oh gosh, I'm really holding on to this story. I'm believing it to be true. I'm believing it to be fixed. So we're practicing letting go. So what does it feel like to you? That's why I wanted to hear what non-grasping and non-clinging feels like to you, or what you know about it. It's a very fluid state, right? It's like being outside in nature, and then there's this flow that's happening of the present moment. It's like a river that flows through us. So the letting go. And then to be clear, the practicing letting go is not necessarily so much about letting go of the thing, the outer thing. It's the inner attachments. So this whole talk is turning and looking towards the inner or the secret life rather than the outer. So I might decide I'm going to let go of social media. Right. And that seems like a nice thing to do, right? I'm going to let go of social media. But then what happens if instead of being on social media, this is a funny example. It's too simplified, but I think you'll understand what I mean. And then I've decided to let go. I made a resolve. It's a beautiful quality that we can resolve things in our practice. But instead of actually really letting go, I'm thinking about it all the time and I'm talking about it with my friends. And then I like keep picking up my phone and looking at it and almost going on Instagram. And then I delete the app and then I think about it a little bit later, right? So that inner freedom hasn't come. I might not actually look at it, but the the mind and heart hasn't let go. So this turning towards our own inner secret life and letting go and letting go. So it's not about the outer things, but it's about the thoughts and the emotions that are causing suffering. And most of our suffering comes from not knowing how to stop clinging. I mean, I think actually this is like one's life work. How do we let go? How does letting go happen? And this is where I do feel like it's something about I can learn from being in the garden where I can create the conditions for the plant to flourish, but I can't actually grow the plant myself. And in this way, we can create the conditions for us to be able to let go, but we can't always do it. It's true. We can't always do it so easily, and we need help, right? We need the support. Sometimes it's very easy. I was giving this talk earlier this week, and someone gave this really beautiful example of how when she was quite young and she had a friend and they had a disagreement, and her friend had come from out of town to visit her, and it was like the first day of a 2-week visit with this close friend of hers, and this friend had said something, and she got really angry about it. And she realized, oh, if I am angry about this, it's going to ruin the entire 2-week visit. And then she just saw it and let it go. And it went like that. Poof, that can happen sometimes. Isn't that quite a miracle to notice when that happens, when it just lets go and it's clean, so clean? This is like, sometimes our minds are not so used to noticing when we've let go or when something shifted. And this is something we can practice doing. It's like the time I had a hip injury. It was like 9 months long. My hip was hurting. I don't know what's wrong with my hip. And I went to the doctor and my hip is hurting. And what should I do? And my hip. And then at some point, I noticed that my hip was no longer hurting. It had been like 3 months and I hadn't even noticed it. Right. And then in the same way, non-clinging, non-grasping can be invisible to us because we're so used to looking towards where's the problem, what's missing, what can I improve, or looking into the outer, and we forget to notice when has the non-clinging happened? When is the non-grasping happened? And how do I actually experience that? Is that peaceful? And so this takes a little bit of practice so that we can learn what it feels like. It's in some ways more subtle of an experience than the clinging on to something. It's a more subtle experience. Sometimes we don't even know that we are suffering. This word is so funny. When I first started listening to Buddhist wisdom, I was like, well, I'm not really suffering. I have food. I'm not in war. I have, my basic needs are met. But this suffering, this Buddhist word suffering, is quite specific in some ways. It's about our internal landscape, again, about our secret life. So there's what's happening. I gave this instruction during the meditation. There's what's happening, and then there's how we're relating to it. And this how we're relating to it is that's the place where we can really start to see, are we suffering? Are we not suffering? So often we don't even know what's happening in our own hearts. And we can sit down to meditate and then see that. Like, oh, yes, I see. I see the mind is really anxious today. Oh, anxious mind and heart is like this. And tend to ourselves. And we can get attached. We can get attached to our anger. Did you ever get attached to your anger? Sometimes we can get attached to being right. Oh, I'm right. This kind of self-righteousness. That's a kind of hardening. It's a way where we can forget actually that we're all in this together. It's where we fix another person or fix ourselves. Because the whole thing, the whole shebang is some sort of wild ride of mystery, of complete change all the time. All the time, even in a half hour meditation, you might have noticed, oh my God, like just a half hour meditation, so many things can happen. This inner secret life, right? That just is flowing through us. So the non-clinging is to allow that, right? To allow that river of change, that river of life. And the non-clinging, sometimes the clinging or the grasping or holding on. We hold on to belief systems. We have belief systems about our bodies or about the world, about our personality. And these are just that. They're just thoughts. They're just beliefs. They're not necessarily true. And we can start to investigate for ourselves, what does non-clinging, what does non-grasping feel like? What is the freedom of that? How do we experience it? All right, my friends, that's what I have for you. I'm very interested from you if you were willing to share so that we can learn from each other what your experience is of non-clinging. And let's see, Patty's got her hand up already. So, Patty, go for it.
I wish you hadn't mentioned the chocolate in your talk, because as soon as you talked about giving out chocolate, I was clinging to the idea of, do I have any chocolate in the house? Can I eat chocolate as soon as the talk is over? Where am I going to get chocolate if I don't have any? Maybe I have baking chocolate I can eat with raisins. So that was my experience of clinging. But before you mentioned the chocolate and you first asked the question, my experience with non-clinging came from not having preferences. When I can let go of my preference, if we're trying to decide where to go to eat or what to watch on TV or what to buy as a gift for someone when we're going to their house, if I can say, it doesn't matter to me, what do you think? I feel much better than if I have an idea and I think we have to do it this way because this is right. So not having a preference is my idea of non-clinging.
Thank you, Patty. That's actually reminding us about this quality of equanimity. You know, when we sit down to meditate and we're practicing our mindfulness meditation, we're actually cultivating a whole host of beautiful qualities, a whole family of beautiful qualities. One is patience, right? And equanimity is another one, kindness, compassion, so many. And then this non-preferences, Patty, you're pointing towards that quality of equanimity. And equanimity sees with an open heart, sees all things equally with an open heart. So thank you for bringing that in. That's beautiful. And then let's see, Mary Page.
Okay. Thank you for this talk. It's very inspiring. I was at first I couldn't really think about I couldn't figure out non-clinging. You know, it's like I know I cling, but when do I not cling? And then I realized, you know, I work on Zoom most of the day or a lot of the day as a therapist. And I have a little kind of reminders on the side of my computer, you know, kind of reminders of what I need to do. And one of them is, what is the quality of my mind right now? It's just asking myself, what is the quality of my mind? And most of the time, surprise, surprise, which has been a surprise to me, it's content and happy and basically empty, just a kind of contented inner state, which has made it very crystal clear when it's not. You know, it's like now I really notice when it's not, and it becomes very clear when it's not. And then when it's not, I'm able to ask myself, okay, what are you clinging to? It's just perfect. And then I can realize right away. I mean, last week I was just cranky about, and I was walking home from an event that happened in our community where I live, and I was walking home, and I was just really irritated and pissed. And then I went, oh, what are you clinging to? What are you clinging to? And it was an event in which it was like a community dinner, and the food was appallingly bad. It was horrible. It was almost not edible. And I was just so angry that that could happen in our nice little community, that all the food could be so bad. It was just stupid. And of course, the minute I realized you were attached to having it all be nice. That's all. Okay. Well, it wasn't. That's the end, not the end of the world, you know. But I think paying attention to the quality of my mind, checking it like 20 times a day, really helps. So that's my little experience.
Thank you for sharing. That's really, really great. And it's a beautiful example of how, when we start to notice what non-clinging is, then we get, right? Like, it gives us more context so we can understand the contrast. We do learn by contrast. And then I like that you said that you're doing it 20 times a day. That's like a pausing practice. That's a beautiful pausing practice that if we could all remember to do sticky notes, I think that's good. And then you're asking the question, what is the quality of your mind? And that's what I was trying to point to with the meditation prompt of how am I relating to it? Right? Like, it's just another way to say that question and fine-tuning these questions so that they land and match for each of us how our mind and heart understands. Well, what is the quality of the mind, or how am I relating to this? It's beautiful. All right, Corey, let's hear from you.
Actually, thank you so much for this. I really appreciated actually your questioning out loud of, is there a difference between letting go and non-clinging or non-grasping? And I was actually reflecting on that a little bit. One of my biggest things that I cling to the most is being busy, doing things, having to do, you know, and it stemmed from psychological reasons of not. Like I was afraid of what I was going to find if I slowed down and just was there. And now it's less that, it's more just habit. And so it is to me a practice of effort. It's not just non-clinging. The effort is the practice, right? And when I apply the effort, I can discover the letting go. It's that remembering. That's the practice. That's the efforting. And I also can sense though that you can effort too much, right? And so you can get caught in clinging in other ways too. But that's my piece. And I feel like when I effort and then I can remember, and then the remembering gives me that sense of, ah, this is letting go. And then it can have a feedback loop to help me let go more.
Beautiful. Thank you. I like the reflection on the effort, like the effort and where the effort comes. That's beautiful. Thank you. And Deborah, let's hear from you.
Okay, I'm very confused now.
Okay.
I got kind of caught up in trying to make a discernment between not clinging and letting go. I know that I'm going to have to make an aspiration or a vow that I would like to let go of this. This is not serving me or anybody else. And then I'm going to have to say, okay, how do I stop clinging to this? And wait, I'm sorry. And I'm going to have to think about that, discerning those two things, if you even were doing that. And I so related to what the other people were saying here. And it seems to me that the last time you came, and probably every time, you hit on something that I was just struggling with that week or that day. And so this weekend, I have a friend in my ME/CFS support group who I've known for about 25 years, and she suffers a lot. And I feel it incumbent upon me. Maybe a little ego there, but I like to think of it as, you know, wanting to help and be compassionate and share with her. She's about 15 years younger than I am. Share with her what's helped me. It's a kind of 12-step thing, don't give advice, but share your experience, hope, and strength. And it always falls flat. And every time after all these years, I decide, stop doing that, honey, Deborah. Don't do it anymore. It upsets you. It doesn't help her. Give it up. And some time goes by and I give it up and then it comes up again and I do it again. So I think I made a tiny bit of, what am I clinging to? Her suffering triggers my history. And I don't want to be there. I want to not be there. It's history for me. I want to move on. I don't want to go back there. I've been listening to it for 25 bloody years. Honey, let it go, I want to say to her. But that's not helpful. So I think this weekend I made again a little smidge, a little titch of progress of accepting. So I think acceptance, it's like this. And then give her love and take care of yourself. So I don't know if that is related to clinging and letting go, but it sort of feels a little resonant for me. So bless you and thank you.
Yeah. I think the inquiry around is letting go different than not clinging is a personal inquiry that perhaps I should inquire into further before I teach on it. So I really invite you to inquire into that also, because I don't have a definitive, like, it's like this in my experience. It's something that's very alive for me right now. And then the other thing I wanted to say about your little story with your friends and how you say, like, you let it go and then you do it for a while and then you forget and then you start, right? So sometimes I feel like we hear, I don't know if you're doing this, but I feel like we hear letting go and we let go and it's a one and done. It's nice when it's a one and done, but that's often not the case because it's a process that's unfolding. The whole thing is a process that's unfolding. And we might have to remember a meditation having to let go 747 times. Right. So it's like Sharon Salzberg, I think, talks about this. It's like we're building up that muscle, that letting go muscle, and we're practicing doing that. And we get to, all of us get the, we have so many opportunities to let go so many times.
Thank you. That was really clarifying because I was sort of patting myself on the back that I had made some progress, but still bemoaning that I was trapped. Before I made, you're not trapped, but caught again, So thank you. It's one step at a time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then was there anybody else? Or are we ready for our, Vita.
So I really wasn't going to say anything until this last little bit. So I, since childhood, always felt like I was being blamed. I was the bad guy. I was being blamed. I felt just lots of those insecurities, right? And then just recently, something came up where I felt that. And I realized I have not felt that for years. So you let go, but it could come back and hit you in the face. But it was really the good part, or the hard part for me was I realized I haven't lived that way for literally years. And then this happened, and it's making me think just a little bit deeper into whatever. But I just wanted to say that when Deborah was talking about something coming back and going away and being annoying. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah. I mean, I'm struck by not that it came back, but that it was gone for so many years. What a blessing, right? What a blessing. Yeah. And that means you know it can go again, right? Like we start to eventually, it starts to get into our thick skulls that All things are impermanent. All of it is. All
I
things
think
are
for me
impermanent.
it also means there's a deeper level that I'm ready to look at.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I really
Yeah.
want to, but I probably. Thank you. So
That's
really very helpful talk tonight.
good. Good.